It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Monday. What's up and welcome in. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. We are happy to be with you as we kick off a training camp week in the nation's capital on G&D. Got a great opportunity for you today. We've got tickets we're giving out to see Creed at Jiffy Lube Live. We'll do that at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. Danny, what's up?
What do you say, dude? Anything in the news this weekend? I always love that, by the way, where it's like, what's the biggest thing in D.C.? We're doing our sports thing over here. There's some big national news going on. You guys might have heard about it. We were just a little engine that could over here. Training camp, 53.
Right.
The rosters. We got it.
Friday night, I'm putting my son to bed.
Yep.
First time he's ever done this. This was such a seminal moment for us. I think it's because I was away last week for most of the week at the All-Star festivities. But I'm putting him to bed, and he is at his, like, sweetest right
sure,
before
right
sleep.
Then, yeah.
Mostly for 98% of the day, he's just a terrorizer.
Yeah, he's a little dude.
But that right then when he goes to bed, he's like at his cutest. And he says, Dad, he says, are the Nats home this weekend? And I said, yeah. And he goes, can me and you go to the game, just me and you, for Daddy new me time? Not with Mom and Reagan and McKinley.
That's how they get you.
And I was like, yeah, I think we could probably do that. So, again, he's never asked for this. So yesterday, we go to the game. Nats get a sweep of the Reds. All I've wanted since James Wood got called up was to see him hit a homer in person. Got to see the three-run bomb. Eighth inning, took a 5-2 lead. But he was locked in for about seven innings. He ate pretty much an entire box of popcorn.
Uh-huh.
He ate an entire bag of peanuts. He sang, take me out to the ball game in the stretch. He got pictures with all of the racing presidents.
Love
he had
it.
A great day. And then James Wood homered in the bottom of the eighth. In the top of the eighth, he fell asleep.
No!
And he fell very asleep.
Yeah.
He woke up when I lifted him up to carry him out of the ballpark right after the sweep was complete, the old wet paper towel. But we had a whale of a day at the park.
So we were across the street at that exact same time. My oldest and I went with his club team, travel team, whatever you call it, a whole bunch of us in the stands, to the DC United Celtic game. Celtic or Celtic, however you pronounce it, they're the best in the Scottish Premier League, and DC United is not the best in the MLS, and they got boat race, but whatever. Two things. Number one, Audi Field rules.
Field is great. I don't know if we can call it a well-kept secret, because I think the secret's been out.
Yeah.
But a big part of the experience there being awesome for everything is that the venue itself is excellent.
It's really good. There are a couple food trucks as you walk in. The space, it's never cramped in the concourse, even though, I mean, listen, it's not as big as Nats Park or some of the other places, but their food options are really good. Everything about it was great. His team got a really cool experience. So because it was a big enough group and they're like trying to do outreach and you know, give these kids cool experiences, they got to go down into the tunnel where the players come out. So they leave their locker rooms. You know how in soccer they do this weird formation where they have to line up next to each other in single file and come out onto the field. So they're down there right outside the locker room, like meeting and greeting the players from both sides and getting high fives and all this other kind of stuff. Really, really cool for them to be able to do that. So that was awesome. Thanks to all the folks with DC United for letting them do that.
That's really great.
That was neat.
And that's the kind of thing, honestly, they should be doing is with the young kids coming out to watch games, you make that memory. You make a soccer fan potentially for life.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be sitting at a bar in 20 years watching Copa in the middle of the afternoon in D.C. somewhere.
He kept telling me, he's like, Dad, I high-five Ben Tekka. And I'm like, that's great. Go to my phone, Ben Tekka, Google. Like, I'm like, you know, like, that sounds good. Are you excited about that, buddy?
You sleep on Ben Tekka.
Who's Ben Tekka?
I have no idea.
What position does he play?
He's a defenseman.
Yep.
Is he?
No.
Okay. He's a forward.
I learned that by watching him play on the field. He moves around real well.
Next, I was going to go midfielder, but good for you.
Yeah, he's fluid.
And good for Ben Tekka for sure. A lot of quarterback news in the NFL we're going to get to today. Jordan Love's not going to practice until he gets a new deal. I have no problem with that, by the way. As long as he's there with his teammates, he's doing everything, he's going through all the meetings, he's not holding out, he's not a distraction, and when the first team offense goes out and starts to run drills, you're just standing behind the play, kind of with your helmet on, listening to all the calls, that's your leverage. That's what you got. You got to be team first, and I think mostly he is. He's also making a business decision, and my guess is he's going to get paid really, really soon. Daniel Jones has been cleared for training camp for the New York Giants, so they, as they pushed all their chips in on Jones, we've watched the decision that they came to do so in Hard Knocks offseason on HBO, they at least get to hit the ground sprinting with him and don't have to rely upon Drew Lock in training camp. We'll get to that. Aaron Rodgers made an excuse for why he wasn't at minicamp. He was on Pardon My Take with Barstool Sports, and he was telling the fellas basically, minicamp now is not what it used to be. Used to be a real thing. Now it's just a couple more days of OTAs, and I was at 10 of the 12 of those, and this was overblown. Somehow the rest of your teammates found it important enough, and all over the league, people decided to come. He might be right, by the way. In fact, I'm sure he is, that minicamp is not what it used to be. They're about to get rid of minicamp, probably, next offseason for that reason. It's still currently the 2 days that you got to be there, and the rest of your teammates showed up. He's just a lot to deal with.
So this is so fascinating to me because, again, the student has become the master. I used to resent the hell out of Brett Favre when everyone else was like, this is great, as he like throws into triple coverage and, you know, leads the league in picks and, you know, is pulling horseshoes out of his tuchus all the time, but couldn't be bothered. Like, teammates had to fly down to wherever he's from and beg him, please come to training camp, please come back, please. Just this endless process. All this is you just change the date, right? It's a new deal where now their social media, like Brett Favre didn't have podcasts or, like, you know, his own platform to say whatever the hell he wanted to say. Just, you know, your regular kind of run-of-the-mill stuff that it was in the 90s. And Rodgers has probably superseded him in terms of that kind of stuff that used to drive me crazy. Like, I was such a Team Rodgers guy for so many years. I'm like, he doesn't get enough credit. He's excellent. He's been settled by a boob of a head coach. They should have won 7 Super Bowls, whatever, whatever. Now I'm kind of like, I'm so exhausted by you. Like, I wish you would just be so much more quarterbacky and less talky.
The other quarterback in the news is Lamar Jackson, who is not able to practice, start a training camp because he's sick, which is not really notable or a story, except he is constantly sick. Like, nobody has more I don't feel good today sick days than Lamar Jackson at quarterback, which is just an observation. It's not a knock. He's one of the great players in the league. He's a 2-time MVP. The Ravens might win the Super Bowl, and it's because of him. Who's, if you do quarterback wins and losses, he should be your guy. Second highest win percentage, I think, in the modern era as a quarterback. He's outstanding. But am I wrong, or does Lamar Jackson run out of sick days most years?
I just tweeted this at Fine and Dandy, Grant's at Grant H. Paulson. Like, I am such a huge fan of his. I think he gets unfair. I think he's held an unfair standard at quarterback as a multi-time MVP. A lot of guys haven't won Super Bowls because Pat Mahomes is sitting there taking them away from people. Whether it's, you know, Burrow, I know they went to one. Josh Allen has none. But for whatever reason, like Lamar, there's this moving goalpost of, they could never win it with him. Well, they haven't yet. And Pat Mahomes has them all. So sorry, but whatever. Period. The next sentence, or maybe you have to do a new paragraph. Nobody gets sick more than that dude. Like, he, like, mix in a Zicam. Like, let's have a couple orange slices, bro.
Can we get this guy a doctor?
Seriously.
And if he has one, which I'd assume he does, he visits someone and gets his physical and whatever else, let's get him a new one.
You get a little airborne from CVS? Somebody swing by. Help him.
I don't know, man. He gets sick a lot. But when it matters, he's normally on the field.
Indeed.
And playing really, really well. I do want to talk about him at some point. Maybe it'll be tomorrow before we get to it. But I'm sure you saw the John Harbaugh comment.
I did, yeah.
Over the weekend, where Harbaugh went in on kind of what you were just talking about. This idea that people still doubt him or he catches a lot of heat. And Harbaugh's point is it's unfair and he's one of the best players in the league and he gets way too much negativity. But the difference, I'd say, between him and some of the other guys you mentioned is when they've been eliminated oftentimes in the playoffs, he has struggled. Like, this past postseason, if you remember, I think he completed 54% of his passes and turned the ball over 2 or 3 times in that playoff game. And so when you have games like that at home in the playoffs and you get eliminated in winnable games, you're going to catch a lot of heat. I mean, that's a long list of guys who has, but that's certainly something we could talk about. But let's start locally here on the gridiron with the Commanders as training camp is ramping up. Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are going to talk to the media tomorrow, and we will have those press conferences for you here on The Fan. And then on Wednesday, practice number one will commence from out in Ashburn, where the rookies have already been at the facility ramping up and getting ready. But I wanted to start with Warren Sharp of Sharp Analytics, who ranked every single position group in the NFL as part of his new analytics magazine that he puts out at the start of every season. And just running through Washington's position groups, I'll read you the numbers, and I want to see what stands out at you to you here. Quarterbacks, 21st. Offensive line, 27th in a 32-team league.
Let's come back to that one.
Running backs, 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Receivers, 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Front seven, 22nd. Secondary, 31st
mm-hmm.
out of 32 teams. And head coach, 25th out of 32. Seems pretty low, in my opinion, on Dan Quinn. But wherever you want to go, tag, you're in.
Yeah, this has been the theme. This has been my drumbeat kind of throughout. And this is from, as you mentioned, Warren Sharp's big behemoth. Is it darn near 600-page? This is what's going to happen in 2024 based on every data and analytic piece that you can find.
Or as I like to call it, the number nerd Bible.
Yeah.
Right? Guys like me, that's what Chris Russell calls us, the number nerds. I mean, this thing is must read. It's like when I go to minor league baseball games, I don't go without my Baseball America handbook is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's every top 30 prospect with all their details and a breakdown. And you carry it around with you. It's your little minor league nerd Bible. This is, if you're a numbers guy in the NFL, you got to go get the Sharp Analytics season preview.
It is essential. So it's based on numbers from last year, but it takes into account, it equalizes for bad schema design. So one of the salient takeaways from this Washington preview section, it has asked for review from last year. And their play calling and optimization was worse than you think. Like, things were worse than we even perceived them to be. They're putting everybody in a bad spot. So even with that as context, you're now trying to extrapolate talent level, even with you're putting guys in bad positions. I don't know if that made sense. It's fairly convoluted. The point is, that offensive line, last year as we're kvetching about it, hey, you got a guy that takes a lot of sacks. Hey, you got a guy that's a neophyte quarterback. Maybe, oh my God, have a glaring emergency and this is terrible. They didn't really do much to fix it. Here, they upgraded a couple spots, right? Or they changed out journeyman veterans that were readily available.
They're gonna have
at center and left guard.
Five are going to be new starters. So whether they guess right or not, we're going to find out.
TBD, yeah.
But so 60% of their line is new.
It's going to be
something.
New. Yeah, so you're right. They did something. The most essential spot, left tackle, it's either journeyman, swing tackle incumbent, or third-round rookie that they're varying opinions on, right? That some people think he's a guard. He struggled at times to tackle. They think they got something. He says in his analysis that this guy might be ready, talking about Coleman, in 2025. I don't think that's what the team would tell you. I don't think that's what Adam Peters and company would tell you. So that one jumps out at me right away. Is the offensive line is not viewed as a strength.
Well, I'll go to the other of the two where they were bottom five in the league, according to his listing, and that was secondary, where he had them 31st. I think that's way too low. I don't agree with that ranking. Now, I will say that while you've been beating the drum on receiver, as an example, as a position where you don't think they've done enough, I've been doing the same at cornerback. I am really, really surprised that this is the group they're going into the year with, where Benjamin St. Juste is your CB1. I like Benjamin St. Juste. Your boy has been a massive advocate of his since day one as a third-round pick out of Minnesota. Cornerback one, Benjamin St. Juste, in a league where everyone's constantly throwing the football and in 11 personnel, that tells me that the room is just not that deep, probably. Who is the starter on the other side of the field? Right now, I would say it's Michael Davis, who's a very physical corner who came over from the Chargers. Is he a guy you want going up against CeeDee Lamb a bunch? I don't know about that. Those are your projected starters. I like what they did in the nickel with Sandra Still. I think Quan Martin can play that position a little bit. My guess is they'll be fine as far as the metrics go by year's end there. But to have an outside boundary corner room with St. Juste and Michael Davis leading the way and then counting on a big breakthrough from Emmanuel Forbes, kind of holding my breath, going, maybe? James Pierre, I don't know who that is. I know he played for the Steelers because I've looked it up on NFL.com. He's going to play for them. They're hoping Noah Igbinoghene, who was with the Cowboys they coached last year, who was a disappointment as a high-round pick. Christian Holmes, I guess, one of those guys breaks through. That's the corner room. So if he just said cornerback 31st, I would go, that's probably a little bit low, but I understand your fears because I've got some of the same. The problem is when you say secondary, where at safety you've got Jeremy Chinn and Derek Forrest and Percy Butler, and you drafted Mike Sanra still, and you drafted Dominique Hampton and St. Juste and Forbes, both in varying degrees, have big upside. Like, there's not only one safety room worse than that. But maybe where I could meet him in the middle is this secondary is laced with potential, but in terms of known commodities, like, I am sure that this guy's really good. They are light on that.
Yeah, there are not a lot of pelts on the wall there. Jeremy Chinn had a really good rookie year in terms of creating some takeaways and a couple of returns for a touchdown. I like him. I like St. Juste as well, but is it good enough to get out of that bottom bucket? And my point that I always make is you could quibble over 30, 31, 32, 27, 28. That's the company you're in. That's what I care about more than anything else.
Well, how about binary? Yeah. Zero or one? Is it a good group or is it not a good group?
Yeah, and it's definitely a zero.
Are you really confident in it or are you not? I don't know how you could be super confident in the secondary based on the corners. Now, if we're just talking safety, I think they got plenty of talent. I'll give that a binary one. With Chinn, Forrest shined at one point as a rookie. It's a new defense. And I just think they're going to coach all these guys better. I actually think every single guy we saw play under the Ron Rivera group is going to play a little bit better under this group.
There's a track record there.
They're going to coach that position as well as anybody in the league. That's what Joe Witt, that's what Dan Quinn have done in their entire career. So why not assume that? But with Chinn, Forrest, I'll throw Butler, Reeves, Dominique Hampton. Like, that's five safeties there. I think there's enough talent. Corner, I can't reiterate this enough. I am nervous. And that is the position I would circle. And we should throw this out there for people. We can open up the phones here as we're basically on the eve of training camp. 800-636-1067 is the number. You can always tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. I mean, what is the position group that you find yourself most anxious about, where you've got the most reservations? Because I would still say corner. No, nobody really is talking about that. We've talked so much about the O-line. Mm-hmm. I get it. Jaden Daniels is the story, and you're trying to help him. We've talked a lot about receiver. Receiver is head and shoulders better than corner. Is it good enough to help the young quarterback? We can debate that. But that receiver room, if it's racing against the cornerback room like in an Olympic trial, it's finishing the race, and the corners still have half of the distance to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, to me, the offensive line, because it's about Daniels, that is a direct thing. Like, that's not a transitivity relationship where if the cornerback room is okay, they might get a turnover more every 3 weeks, and that helps him. To me, this is like, is he going to get hit three more times a game? Is he going to get hurt? Is he going to be able to finish? Is he going to be able to have a cohesive group in front of him so that he's allowed to be maximized and protected? I don't trust it, quite frankly. So to me, that's more urgent. What's the worst position group? It's cornerback. But what do I care more about? What's more important to me? What's like the thing that keeps me up at night? Because this whole thing's about Daniels. With all due respect, it's not about Mikey Sanders still. If one guy's successful, everybody looks like a genius. And it's not Sanders still. It's not Jeremy Chinn. It's not Dominique Hampton turns out to be a pretty decent player. We saw that with the previous regime. They unearthed a couple of guys, and that's adorable. They didn't get quarterback right, so none of them work here.
I also want to dive back into next the ranking of the head coaching, meaning Quinn.
Didn't that jump out at you?
25 and 32 seemed low, considering their excitement and certainly the staff that he was able to put together, so we can get to that next. But here's the question, 800-636-1067. Danny is going O-line. I'm going a little deeper, off the board maybe, and saying corner. What position group are you most worried about as we start training camp here in the nation's capital? MGM National Harbor listener lines available, 800-636-1067 on G&D.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's training camp time in Ashburn, practice number one set for Wednesday. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. At 4 o'clock, ahead of the Beltway Blitz, we'll be giving away tickets to see Creed at Jiffy Lube Live. If you want those tickets, you better be listening. Warren Sharp went position group by position group for every NFL team for Sharp Analytics in his season preview, and he ranked how each group stacks up. For the Commanders, notably, he had the offensive line 27th, he had the secondary 31st, and those are two of the groups on Danny and I's lists here as to what you're most worried about as it pertains to this roster. Danny's going O-line, I'm going with specifically cornerback. I actually think the safety room is solid and really raises the tide. I think ranking the secondary 31st is way unfair. I think they're better than that. But let's go to our callers. 800-636-1067. Joe's out in Reston. Joe, what position group gives you the most nerves going into the season?
Yeah, I think you guys hit it pretty good. With O-line was definitely my number one and then corner number two. But I think if I had to pick number three, which kind of goes with it's going to be edge rusher. I think we really don't have anyone proven that's going to go out there and get sacks. I mean, I know they went and got Dorrance Armstrong, but he's never been more than a rotational guy with Micah Parsons on the other side. He's not going to have that here, and if they're going to thrust him into like that much of a bigger role, I just don't see where this production is going to come from, and it's only going to magnify how bad the corner room is, because if we're not getting pressure, those guys are going to be covering way too long, and I just think we're going to get diced up.
Smart call, man. Appreciate you making it. To me, there's two ways to do it, creating pressure. Way number one, the way that the New York Giants got to and won two Super Bowls, the way that Ron Rivera's Carolina Panthers team got to a Super Bowl, ultimately lost it, but is that you've got four really good, working together, cohesive pass rushers up front that can win one-on-one. That's the easiest thing to do, cover with seven. If you don't have that, which they don't, then you do what Washington has done. You don't just square peg and round hole that thing. You've got one play where Frankie Louvu is lined up, standing up over the right tackle. The next play, Dorrance Armstrong is standing up. Or the next play, somebody totally different that we haven't even thought of. Jamin Davis is blitzing downhill. You mix and match. You make it so that nobody knows where the rusher is coming from. You force the offense to adjust, and you dictate in that way. I think that's what they're going to do. You're right that they don't have a star. They don't have a guy that can do 50. They don't have T.J. Watt. There aren't that many guys that do. There aren't many teams that have that easy button where a superstar pass rusher from one side is going to A, produce, B, take up all the attention. I think they're going to have to get creative, and that's kind of on Joe Witt and Dan Quinn and company.
So I echo all of that, although where we'll part company slightly is it can be a good and bad thing if they're super creative and guys are coming from all over the place, because now you're just talking blitzing, and blitzing gets you beat badly occasionally, right? I mean, if you are reliant upon blitzing to get to the quarterback, it's a problem just generally. You need guys on the edge who can win. You need pass rush win rate, edge rushers. Or, in their case, you need your D tackles, Payne, Allen, eventually, Jerjon Newton, to do that too. But Dorrance Armstrong's 7.5 sacks last year, playing the snaps that he did, gives me some hope that maybe he could be a 9.5 sack guy. He had 8.5 when he had a total of 5 starts. And if you look at percentage of snaps played with the Dallas Cowboys that year, I think it was like around, 70 on a good game, and a lot of times closer to half the snaps. There's no reason to believe maybe he can't go up toward 9 if he has a great year, double-digit sacks as an edge. That's certainly their hope. That's what they paid him to do. But other than that, Clelin Ferrell, Dante Fowler, K.J. Henry, like, this is not a great plan. This is kind of just throwing bodies and resources with very little money at a problem, quantity over quality. So I hope they don't have to end up having to blitz a lot. But the key to their pass rush is not going to be the edge, in my opinion. It's going to be Daron Payne getting back to being the guy they paid him to be as a game wrecker up front. It's going to be John Allen, who I think is playing for his next contract this year, because it's my personal opinion he's not going to be back here, and they're going to move on from him next offseason. You know, he in the back of his mind, he knows, I got no more guaranteed money left. Mm-hmm. I got to go out and show out. Those guys, Newton, you're allowed to kind of lead with interior pass rush, kind of minor in exterior pass rush, and I think that's the type of defense they're probably going to have to be. Let's go to Steve and Bowie. Steve, the question on Grant and Danny is, what position group are you most nervous about going into training camp?
Definitely good day, guys. Definitely offensive line. I mean, when you look at it, going against the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Eagles is bad enough, but then also you got the AFC North this year. You're going to be a murderer's row going against linebackers. And Trotting Jane Daniels out there, he's going to be tough sledding all year. So definitely want to shore the offensive lineup. They are who they are, but you can't shore them up. But, you know, hopefully they're going
to be the best. Your phone's breaking up real bad. Appreciate you, though.
But, yeah, point taken. I mean, you look in the division. Where are they weakest? If we're sort of, you know, being objective here. Cornerback, offensive line. As I said, look at the division. The Giants, thank goodness, still don't have anybody at wide receiver other than Malik Nabers that scares you. But Philadelphia does. So does Dallas. Speaking of defensive ends, the Giants have beaten the brakes off them for a couple straight years because they haven't been able to block those guys, Thibodeau and company. Now you add Brian Burns to that equation. I'll let you know when they block Micah Parsons for the first time. And Philadelphia is a year removed from setting the sack record. So that's an uphill climb for sure.
Go through the O-line. Is there a decent chance they end up above average at each position? Let's just go through them. I would say at right guard with Sam Cosmi, they will end up above average.
I think they're above average right now, yeah.
He's outstanding. Okay, let's stay on the right side. Andrew Wiley. Is there a decent chance they end up above average there?
No.
I would say no, but I do think they'll be about average. He played much better down the stretch than early in the year. Do you agree with that?
I do.
So I'll say they have a chance to be average at right tackle. They'll be above average at right guard. Is there a path at center to being above average after they paid Tyler Biadasz $10 million a year?
Yes.
I agree with that. Nick Allegretti, who they're projecting as a starter who's been a backup with the Chiefs, chance that he ends up being an above average starter?
That's a big variable to me. I really have no idea.
Same, but I would say yes because we haven't really seen him get a chance to start.
Right, so there's no great negative sample either. So I'll say yes, but that there's a big degree of variance on that one for me where he could be another one-year guy that was readily available that's not particularly good, and we have to do this exercise again next year.
Left tackle, Cornelius Lucas. I would say no.
No to that one.
Not because I don't think he's okay. I do, actually. But, again, you're talking about the chances of him playing at a top 15 level, and that I find a hard time seeing.
Agreed. Yeah, to me, the chance for that is if the perfect scenario that Coleman takes over by, what, week 5, week 6, or even earlier, they can't keep him off the field, and they have the gem of the draft. They have a guy that nobody saw doing what he's doing, and he's now the guy that, how did everyone miss on this dude? Again, that's a moonshot. That's hard to predict that. It's hard to count on that.
I just got a text a couple of minutes ago from our buddy Zach Kruger from Roto World Football, who said, I'm guessing you know this. He was talking about my corner point. He said, but looking up some of the numbers, Benjamin St. Juste and Michael Davis allowed the second and sixth most receiving yards against for cornerbacks in 2023, according to PFF. He said over the last 2 years, they're both top 10 in terms of most receiving yards allowed. I think you being nervous is justified. The numbers aren't great. Now, I happen to project still that St. Juste can be good. I really like how physical he is. I like that he plays press and he gets up on the line of scrimmage and he can beat people up. And at times he gets called for penalties, which tells me he's right there and he's around his guy and he does a lot of things well in terms of coverage. I also think he's done a lot of that without great coaching, certainly last season, if nothing else. So I still have some potential, but I am putting a lot of eggs in the just closing my eyes and assuming Dan Quinn and Joe Witt are going to help fix some problems basket.
Yeah, now he seems like a Dan Quinn corner historically, talking about St. Juste, right? Like
if you designed one in a lab, it would be Benjamin St. Juste.
Yeah, the big physical long arm gets a little handsy sometimes and maybe gets called for one more penalty, you know, per game than you'd like, but that's the cost of doing business if you got a guy that's going to maul you a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I could see that being a good fit.
What's interesting is we talk about some of these position groups. I mean, they're not going to come out and say, hey, we didn't go for it this season. But I wonder what their logic is behind the scenes. Because one of two things has to be true. They either think they're really good in these positions and we're wrong, which I don't quite think that's the case. They're too smart. Or they just decided we're not going to fix everything in one offseason. We're not going to spend all of our money. Because Adam Peters told us as much on this show, if you remember. He's like, we're not going to not roll money over. We're not going to spend everything. We're thinking about this as a one-year plan and as a 3- and a 5-year plan. And it's pretty clear next offseason's when they might be more aggressive, hopefully. If they're not, we'll have a whole different conversation to have at that point. But if I'm a first-time general manager and I'm a part of a new front office trying to prove that we got a good thing going here, It would be hard for me to build a few position groups where I go into the season really scared. And either they are, or they think, you guys just don't know what you're talking about.
So my response to that is it's not a contradiction. It's a thought based on that. If I'm inheriting this group, again, I'm Danny Peters, so now my hair is excellent. I've got like a 5 o'clock shadow, and I'm way more handsome than I am. I'm going, I've got a first-round draft pick from last year, corner. I got a second-round draft pick at corner, safety, whatever you want to call it, from last year. It's not financially sensible just to jettison those guys. If I turn over rookie contract Derek Forrest, rookie contract St. Jude, rookie contract, you know, go down the list, and replace them with guys that I think are a little bit better, what does that really get me, right, other than like a bad cap situation? We'll roll with this. To me, this is one of those, I think we're going to fix this later. We'll see if we've got something here. Maybe we do. The chances are we probably don't. I think they know that that's an issue.
Shane is in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Shane?
Commander Danny and Grant. Grant, I got to tell you, man, I first of all, how you guys doing today?
Good, bud.
Hey, look, it's good to be back in D.C. I brought the rain with me. But here's the thing, man. If you're saying St. Juice has all this potential, we're in trouble. Like, our corners right now are in dire need of help. Everybody's talking about the quarterback, the offensive line. If you do not get that C.D. Lamb, all these number one receivers ate us up last year with a somewhat decent secondary. Look at our corners where we got going in next year. And you tell me who you're going to stop. Like, we're off to get up the first six games. I just don't see it. I think that's the weakest part of our team right now is the corners. We got to do something about the corners. We got to. You had Forbes last year that came off a horrible rookies campaign, and you got Juice coming in. Right now, our safeties, I'm not too worried about our safeties. I think our safeties can play. They just need more playing time. But right now, our corners are in dire need of help. St. Juice ain't scaring nobody. I don't care how physical you are. C.D. Lamb's going to go right by him. All the Brown, but look at just in our division alone.
Appreciate you, bud.
Thank you, bud.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Eagles have a dude in A.J. Brown. The Cowboys have one in C.D. Lamb. The Giants don't yet, but Malik Nabers has a chance to be...
He bought a train ticket to Dudetown.
Spectacular.
You know?
So if he is who the Giants and a lot of other teams thought he might be coming out, then you're dealing with a top 10 receiver six times in your six division games just by the three teams you're playing twice. One of the greatest stars in one of our country's most popular sports will bear the flag in Friday's opening Olympic ceremonies. We'll tell you who and why the honor is history in the making next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on the Fan, top of the hour, what one of the Commanders' minority owners had to say about a possible rebrand. Some good intel into their thinking and update. Not that it's necessarily overly newsy, but on just where they're at and why right now isn't rebrand time. We'll get to that right at the top of the hour. Danny, LeBron James is going to be the flag bearer for the U.S. team. From what I can gather, it looks like one man, both get to carry flags walking in. So there's a female, there's a male Olympian, and they get the honor. So two will do it and kind of front of the line as captains of the American Olympians. And two-time Olympic gold medalist LeBron James was selected by what appears to be over 590 American Olympians in a vote to be the guy that gets to hold the flag, which has to be an unbelievable honor.
That's cool.
Here's what I couldn't believe. I saw in a couple places he is the first men's basketball player to ever lead the Olympic processional with the flag. Like, Jordan never did that, I guess. No one has ever had this honor until him.
So I initially saw that and I balked too. I went, wait, what? How's that possible? Then this is my thought process. I'm throwing this out there. You don't like it, you throw it right back. Most of the time, your Olympians are going to be guys in their 20s. They don't have the longevity and the career and the reverence that LeBron does, who's my age, basically, who's 40 years old. So because he's done this across multiple Olympics, multiple generations of NBA careers, a lot of these athletes like remember him from when they were in diapers and they've seen him. And he, so now you have that, like, you know, multi-generational deity-like figure that all these guys have looked up to for so long, and that's how he gets voted in. So most of the time, it's like when Jordan was in the Olympics in 92, what was he, like 29, 30? He's still the greatest ever at that point, but it's still not that, you know, that reverence that he would go on to do that much more in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, he was in the middle, I think it was championship number two he just finished.
Sure.
Not six.
I just would think that Jordan was the biggest star, I would imagine.
For sure.
All of the Olympic athletes in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly thereafter. I think the whether it was the dream team or not, in subsequent Olympics, I'd imagine he participated after the 92 Olympics when they won gold. Never did they get together and vote and go, oh, the Chicago Bulls champion that everybody loves and thinks is one of the greatest athletes ever.
We could have that guy.
We're all wearing his shoes. He didn't do it. I just think that's surprising. I mean, frankly, I would have guessed like Kevin Durant or Steph Curry recently. Like, there's no bigger star than the guys that are walking in the USA gear that play in the NBA. So I just would have thought someone's done it before. The other thing that I think of when I see this is it kind of feels good to get to root for LeBron. A little bit. Here's what I mean by that. Did anyone check out us playing against South Sudan when we almost lost to South Sudan?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about South Sudan as a basketball entity.
I think they're better than North Sudan, apparently.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Because they almost beat the United States of America. We were favored in that game by tens of points. I think it was something like 40 points. I could look it up. But it was a crazy line where it was like supposed to be Alabama versus directional Louisiana or something in week one. Like the tune-up preseason game for the SEC champions in week one, right? We almost lost.
Yep.
Now, it wasn't the Olympics. It was a friendly. It's kind of the ramping up and the preseason of the Olympics, so to speak. So I don't know that it goes on record if we lose as one of the worst games in team history or biggest upsets in sports history, because you could make the case they're just getting their work in and whatever. But the only reason they won was because LeBron at the end of the game just decided that we weren't going to lose that day, luckily.
Yep.
And to be able, in the final possessions now, just as an American, watching the game going, somebody help me. Somebody do something. I don't want to lose to South Sudan. This is kind of embarrassing. And when LeBron drives to the rim, throughout his entire career, 99.9% of the time, I'm going, miss it, miss it, miss it, miss it, miss it. And to be going, make it, make it. Felt kind of good.
It's nice.
And when he takes over and he makes the big bucket and he does his 6'8", 270 thing where no one can defend him and he's ramming into people and going to the line, normally he's just the biggest guy on the block. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. He's one of the greatest players of all time, but it's not really my thing. But it felt kind of awesome to be like, LeBron James saving the day made me happy.
You know what I've always felt is that crab dribble's not a travel. I've always thought he never walks, and I think all the charges called against him were bogus when he's wearing that USA uniform.
For some reason, his complaining to the officials wasn't annoying.
He's justified. Every time he's being fouled, FIBA official guy.
But am I onto something here? Doesn't it feel kind of good to get to root for LeBron? Because now, I don't just want him to do well. I need him to do well.
Yeah, it is a bit of a relief.
Funny
honestly.
How you put USA on the front of the jersey and things change
a
pretty
lot
quickly.
Of things change pretty quick for yours truly. I'll sell my soul as long as that USA team wins. It's fine by me.
Obviously, Sidney Crosby's Canadian. It'd be the same kind of deal, though. That would feel really, really weird to me if I'm jumping out of my chair screaming and being excited because Sidney Crosby scored a goal for Team USA.
Yeah, like if somehow, let's say the Winter Olympics are here in D.C., and you and I are going to a semifinal match, and Warren Fogle is an American, and he skates around after the game-winning goal, and everyone's like clapping for him. Maybe like, I don't care about that dirty hit on T.J. Oshie, buddy. Warren Fogle's my guy. I love you, pal. Always have. Oshie got in your way. You were going to those boards, and he got in your way when you collarboned him.
Another, luckily, Canadian hockey player.
There you go.
But in a hypothetical.
That's what we're talking, hypotheticals.
Red, white, and blue. That would be hard. But go LeBron.
Is Brad Marchand an American?
You won't hear me say this a lot. Save this one in the archive. Go LeBron James.
Team LeBron over here.
Oof.
Tough to say.
He's my guy for the next couple of weeks. What a minority owner for the Commanders said about a possible rebrand. Next on G&D. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Top of the hour, what one of the Commanders minority owners had to say about a possible rebrand. Some good intel into their thinking and update. Not that it's necessarily overly newsy, but on just where they're at and why right now isn't rebrand time. We'll get to that right at the top of the hour. Danny, LeBron James is going to be the flag bearer for the U.S. team. From what I can gather, it looks like one woman and one man, both get to carry flags walking in. So there's a female, there's a male Olympian, and they get the honor. So two will do it and kind of front of the line as captains of the American Olympians. And two-time Olympic gold medalist LeBron James was selected by what appears to be over 590 American Olympians in a vote to be the guy that gets to hold the flag, which has to be an unbelievable honor.
That's cool.
Here's what I couldn't believe. I saw in a couple places he is the first men's basketball player to ever lead the Olympic processional with the flag. Like, Jordan never did that, I guess. No one has ever had this honor until him.
So I initially saw that and I balked too. I went, wait, what? How's that possible? Then this is my thought process. I'm throwing this out there. You don't like it, you throw it right back. Most of the time, your Olympians are going to be guys in their 20s. They don't have the longevity and the career and the reverence that LeBron does, who's my age, basically, who's 40 years old. So because he's done this across multiple Olympics, multiple generations of NBA careers, a lot of these athletes like remember him from when they were in diapers, and they've seen him. And so now you have that, like, you know, multi-generational deity-like figure that all these guys have looked up to for so long, and that's how he gets voted in. So most of the time, it's like when Jordan was in the Olympics in 92, what was he, like 29, 30? He's still the greatest ever at that point, but it's still not that, you know, that reverence that he would go on to do that much more in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, he was in the middle, I think it was championship number two he just finished.
Sure.
Not six.
I just would think that Jordan was the biggest star, I would imagine.
For sure.
All of the Olympic athletes in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly thereafter. I think the whether it was the Dream Team or not, in subsequent Olympics, I'd imagine he participated after the 92 Olympics when they won gold. Never did they get together and vote and go, oh, the Chicago Bulls champion that everybody loves and thinks is one of the greatest athletes ever.
We could have that guy.
We're all wearing his shoes. He didn't do it. I just think that's surprising. I mean, frankly, I would have guessed like Kevin Durant or Steph Curry recently. Like, there's no bigger star than the guys that are walking in the USA gear that play in the NBA. So I just would have thought someone's done it before. The other thing that I think of when I see this is it kind of feels good to get to root for LeBron a little bit. Here's what I mean by that. Did anyone check out us playing against South Sudan when we almost lost to South Sudan?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about South Sudan as a basketball entity.
I think they're better than North Sudan, apparently.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Because they almost beat the United States of America. We were favored in that game by tens of points. I think it was something like 40 points. I could look it up. But it was a crazy line where it was like supposed to be Alabama versus directional Louisiana or something in week one. Like the tune-up preseason game for the SEC champions in week one, right? We almost lost.
Yep.
Now, it wasn't the Olympics. It was a friendly. It's kind of the ramping up and the preseason of the Olympics, so to speak. So I don't know that it goes on record if we lose as one of the worst games in team history or biggest upsets in sports history, because you could make the case they're just getting their work in and whatever. But the only reason they won was because LeBron at the end of the game just decided that we weren't going to lose that day, luckily.
Yep.
And to be able, in the final possessions now, just as an American,
yeah,
watching the game going, somebody help me. Somebody do something. I don't want to lose to South Sudan. This is kind of embarrassing. And when LeBron drives to the rim, throughout his entire career, 99.9% of the time, I'm going, miss it, miss it, miss it, miss it, miss it. And to be going, make it, felt kind of good.
It's nice.
And when he takes over and he makes the big bucket and he does his 6'8", 270 thing where no one can defend him and he's ramming into people and going to the line, normally he's just the biggest guy on the block. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. He's one of the greatest players of all time, but it's not really my thing. But it felt kind of awesome to be like, LeBron James saving the day made me happy.
You know what I've always felt is that crab dribble's not a travel. I've always thought he never walks, and I think all the charges called against him were bogus when he's wearing that USA uniform.
For some reason, his complaining to the officials wasn't annoying.
He's justified. Every time he's being fouled, FIBA official guy.
But am I onto something here? Doesn't it feel kind of good to get to root for LeBron? Because now I don't just want him to do well. I need him to do well.
Yeah, it is a bit of a relief,
funny
honestly.
How you put USA on the front of the jersey and things change pretty
quick. A lot
of
things change pretty quick for yours truly. I'll sell my soul as long as that USA team wins. It's fine by me.
Obviously, Sidney Crosby's Canadian. It'd be the same kind of deal, though. That would feel really, really weird to me if I'm jumping out of my chair screaming and being excited because Sidney Crosby scored a goal for Team USA.
Yeah, like if somehow, let's say the Winter Olympics are here in D.C. and you and I are going to a semifinal match and Warren Fogle is an American and he skates around after the game-winning goal. Ooh. And everyone's like clapping for him. Maybe like, I don't care about that dirty hit on T.J. Oshie, buddy. Warren Fogle's my guy. I love you, pal. Always have. Oshie got in your way. You were going to those boards and he got in your way when you collarboned him.
Another, luckily, Canadian hockey player.
There you go.
But in a hypothetical.
That's what we're talking, hypotheticals.
Red, white, and blue. That would be hard. But go LeBron.
Is Brad Marchand an American?
You won't hear me say this a lot. Save this one in the archive. Go LeBron James.
Team LeBron over here.
Oof.
Tough to say.
He's my guy for the next couple of weeks. What a minority owner for the Commanders said about a possible rebrand. Next on G&D.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.